Hey, everybody, just a quick word before we start this week's episode. We want to tell you about this great thing that the improv troupe Human Propaganda is putting on October 20th at the People's Republic of Coffee Cafe there on 12th Avenue here in Seattle. Beautiful Seattle. It's going to be great. I am going to be the guest monologuist, and I'm going to be telling some stories, and then the Human Propaganda, along with Rachel Bell from 97.3 FM Cairo, is going to be acting them out. It's free October 20th. It's a Saturday. Come on out, will ya? Hello and welcome, everyone.
Welcome to Earth.
Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 117.
The cornerstone of any nutritious breakfast.
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series, I am your host, Aaron Roden.
Whoa, ass ahoy.
And this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. We've got a fantastic show planned for you today.
Woo!
The comedian Derek Sheen, very funny man, is going to be joining us, telling us about a very interesting story. Very, very interesting story. His father, get this, his father was arrested in the 70s for selling secrets to the Soviets. Check that out, right? How we roll here on the Air Raid Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I do have to say one thing about our last episode, episode 116, in memoriam of my good friend Kelly Dickerson. We did have a couple of the facts wrong on the circumstances of his death. I'm not going to go into what we got wrong. You can look online. Find that at seattletimes.com if you need to know the exact circumstances, but we don't really want to go back into that, right? So I did, mention that a lot of that stuff, a lot of the stories were from my perspective, and we appreciate everybody's feedback and all the messages, the emails that you sent to us concerning that, and we thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for listening to that that memorial episode for my friend Kelly. So let's move on here. I had a great time talking to Derek. He is a great dude, and it's always a lot of fun to talk to somebody that you have kind of an instant connection with, right? So I think what you guys are going to hear in this episode 117 is a new friendship being forged. Seriously, I mean, the guy loves horror movies. How can you not like somebody like that, right? And also, like I said before, really, really interesting life story, interesting family. Wow, man. Yeah, you guys are really going to dig it. So, without further ado, let's just get straight into it because this one's a little bit longer. And yeah, we just want to start in. Actually, before we do that, we want to remind you guys that you can go to iTunes and rate and review the show. It really helps us out in the long run to continue to get great guests like the upcoming Derek Sheen, the very wonderful and talented man. But yeah, we've had a lot of great guests on this show, and we want to make sure that we keep that going for you guys. We're doing this for you. Okay, so do us a solid. This is a free service that we're giving you guys each week, and we would appreciate the help. So go to iTunes, set up an account for your mom, your dad, your brother, your grandma, your granddad. Doesn't matter if they're gone, they're not with us anymore. Just do that, okay? Let's be less than honest with our ratings, shall we? That's terrible. That's horrible, you guys. I'm sorry. I apologize. Also, one last plug. Sorry, dudes and dudettes. Remember, we do have the donate button set up, and we are selling t-shirts and posters from the merch tab at our website, www.air-raid.net. where you can get all the upcoming episodes, you can get the news, you can find out more about us, and you can go into the archives and get episodes with like Dana Gould, Bob Saget, John Roderick, John Richards of KEXP. How about the Dismemberment Plan? You like that band? We've talked to them way back in the day. Sean Nelson, all sorts of great stuff, guys. Moshe Kasher, Pete Holmes, Eddie Pepitone. The list goes on and on. Go to air-raid.net, archives tab, and take a listen, won't you? All right, let's get started, shall we? We're featuring music by the band The Blakes today. They've got a new album out, and in typical Air Raid fashion, we do not have the Blakes website pulled up on the second computer. So, you guys, just go to Google, look up The Blakes on your computer, and do that, okay? Check out their new album. It's promising to be very, very good. This is something a little bit older. This song is called Don't Bother Me, and we will be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with very special guest, comedian Derek Sheen. Oh, man, this is going to be good. You guys are going to like this. You guys are going to like this. His dad was in the mob, man. His dad was in the mob, and he was like a spy. It's amazing. All right, we'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Welcome back to the Air Raid Podcast. Joining me here in Dining Room Studios, high atop the Greenwood neighborhood here in North Seattle, is comedian Derek Sheen.
Hello!
And not only that, he plays a mean air drum.
Yeah, did you catch me spinning the sticks?
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah. That's like one of my favorite things to do in the car. When, like, you've got a really just, you know, just rocking drum sound. That sounded so dumb.
No, I was really
following. Let's start over.
Play the song all over again, please.
Yeah. Well, welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, totally, man. It's been kind of a long time coming. We've been talking about this for a while.
We haven't podcasted since I showed up an hour and a half late for my own podcast.
For your own podcast. Yeah. Delicious mediocrity.
Yeah, that thing got flushed after about a year. We're just like,
what happened with that, man? I really enjoyed my guest spot on there.
I thought it was a fun show, but it was hard because Mark and Doug are great co-hosts. We all work together really well.
Yeah, yeah.
But with Mark's schedule and Doug's schedule and me not doing anything but stand up, I was like, let's just do a podcast now. And they're like, we can't. We have schedules. So after a while, it got harder and harder to book guests. And I think after a while, I just wanted to pull the plug because I think it was harder. We started getting more local guys like, hey, there's an open micer who also doesn't have a job and he should do the show. And then we'd pull him in and I'm like, I don't want to talk to this guy. He's got forehead hair and
he's got a goiter. I don't talk to people with goiters.
Yeah, I think the second to last show when we interviewed a local guy who had just started because he was available.
Yeah.
And it just turned out to be me talking over him because I said everything. And at this point, the first time he's like, anyway, so I'm like, I don't know if you ever like figured a girl before. And you're like, okay, I'm done talking. I'm talking for the rest of the show.
Are you serious? He actually said that. That was something he said.
You ever like ever been fingering a girl? And then and I'm like, okay, we're done. Let's go ahead and cut his mic.
Was he from Enumclaw?
He might as well have been.
No offense. No offense to
No, he's not from Enumclaw. He didn't have wings.
Listeners. I was telling Derek off air before we started that I went to an open mic once in Enumclaw. I was visiting some friends down there. And I love Enumclaw. It's a great place. But the open mic was not very good.
It's the rural open mic, though. That's the problem, is when you go to rural areas.
Yeah.
That's people don't go because they're at home and they're like, man, I really need to break out of this one-horse town and just do stand-up. That's my dream. Yeah. They go, hey, I can yell into a microphone. I could say the C word or the N word.
Right.
And then I'm going to go and you're gonna find other reasons to love me. A wife of 25 years. And, hey, bring the kids. They're still old, and they're old enough to get in the bar now and living with us because we're all going to be happy family.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is sad. How old are you?
Oh, boy.
And why are you still living with your mother?
Because she loves my jokes and is very – she's one of my main writers and really a big inspiration to me because she pays all the bills.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. I will be 43 in December.
43? You don't look 43.
Thank
man.
You. God bless you.
Yeah.
This is me.
You're like a young 18.
I'm a young 39.
No, I was going to say, I would have guessed that we were around the same age. I'm 32.
Oh.
So, yeah.
I thought you were in your 20s. I honestly thought you were in your 20s.
Did you really? Yeah,
just really tired.
Just no. super fucking tired. Or very high. Just very, very high.
No,
constantly bloodshot.
I would not have known you were in your 30s.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's nice of you to say.
Very soft skin.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I shaved last night.
Oh, see, that's what
we tried to do a little photo shoot, my wife and I, last night. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with clothes off. There were clothes on. I got my suit because I need some new...
Then I don't want to hear about it.
Right. This story just got super boring. No, but we were trying to do this photo shoot last night and it just was not working out. Like every photo that my wife took, I was like, that's crap.
Is she a photographer, by the way?
No, she's not.
Oh.
Yeah, so it didn't hurt her feelings.
Okay.
Yeah. it's not her job.
You weren't shitting on her career choice. Jesus, do you even know what a flash is?
How do you get paid?
Christ almighty, do you even know? The camera's pointing right at your face. You're doing this wrong. Let me have it. Stop. Why are you crying? I mean, this is what you do for a living. This is why I'm the only one who works.
Sit in the closet. Take your 5-minute timeout.
Nobody cares about your pictures of candles. Nobody cares, all right? They're already... It's a really bad idea. We're just being honest.
And fruit cornucopias. Thanksgiving-themed fruit cornucopias.
Yeah, you're the only one who finds that interesting.
Oh, man. Yeah, so we were doing this photo shoot last night. It just wasn't working out. So I shaved. I thought the problem was because I have bald spots on my face. And so I shaved, and now I look like this.
Do you get the patchy beard? Because I get
patchy beard. You're pretty full.
If I try to thin it out.
Yeah,
it grows heavier on one side than the other.
Oh, so I
have
get
to
that, yeah.
I comb yeah. it. I have to comb it so it doesn't get these weird blotchy. I have Irish face.
Yeah, yeah.
Irish face problems.
I got white trash face.
Ah,
is what I have. Yeah, yeah.
Living too close to the Gulf.
So where are you from, Derek? Are you originally a Seattleite?
I was born and raised here. Born in Burien, the black shoe White Sox capital of the world.
Nice.
Yeah, right by the airport, right underneath the airstrip.
That's why you're so funny.
That's probably why I have tiny hands. a lot of fumes
and two buttholes.
Yeah, I have 8 buttholes.
So what was life like growing up down in Burien?
It was
for
fun.
People who don't know that Burien is very close to the airport.
Very, like, you're right under the airstrip. Yeah. It's the airport city, but it also was, they used to call it the center of the known universe because it was right directly between Seattle and Tacoma.
Oh, okay.
And on all points in between, and the airport was right there, so it was kind of the hub city.
Right, right.
And in the 50s, it was kind of a, you know, it wasn't a boom town, but it was a place that a lot of veterans landed after mm-hmm. World War II and had kids, and they had parks and movie theaters, and then in the 70s...
it was a bustling hub.
Yeah, it really was. There was a bunch of bars and a, you know, kind of a swinging weird place. A lot of funny car, like it was a place where they had funny car races. They had all kinds of weird
shit.
Right,
right.
Then the 70s hit and people were like, hey, let's go ahead and just build more apartments. And then after that, it was like, here's a five and dime store and then a, you know, thrift shop. And then all the old people started moving out and moving into retirement. It got weird. And
it got super weird.
My dad, I lived with my dad's family for a little while because mm-hmm. My mom was very young and had to work a full-time job, so they raised me. But he was in the mob at the time, so the Burien Mafia. He worked for the Calicuccio family, which was part of the Gambino crime family.
And shut
I'm
up.
Dead Are serious. And spent the first 8 years of my life at in Lompoc, a federal penitentiary out in the California desert.
Really?
Yeah.
Because your dad was incarcerated?
Yeah, he was accused of treason. And, well, it was treason, but it's just that they didn't really sell actual military secrets. They sold phony military secrets. That's why they didn't get executed.
Really?
Yeah. Real story.
You're fucking joking. What? Okay, so...
And his dad ran a pizza shop, and then my grandmother was an accountant for Boeing.
No shit. Yeah. So when did your father first get incarcerated for that?
1970. Like, I think January of 1970.
Really?
Like, I was born in December, and I think, of 69, and mm-hmm. January or February of that next year, of 1970, he was arrested.
No shit.
Yeah.
How old were you?
3 months.
Oh, 3 months. Okay, yeah. So that makes sense because you're 10 years older than me. So
see.
There we go.
1969, baby of the 60s.
So when did your family tell you what your dad had done? Or did you know as a child?
No, I had no idea. I thought my dad just didn't love me.
Really?
No, my mom told me that he was very busy and couldn't visit, and I never really asked that much until I was like six, and then she started explaining stuff to me.
Right.
Because my grandparents would always tell me, like, oh, your dad's such a great man, and he loves you so much, and blah, and I'm like, well, why doesn't he come and see me on my birthday?
Yeah.
And they were like, he really wants to, really bad, but he just can't come this year, or until you're 14. He can't really come and see you until he has visitation rights.
He's really busy making license plates right now.
He's busy trying to not get his asshole plugged.
Oh, my God.
It was very, like, I asked later on, and my mom opened up the hope chest and brought all the newspaper articles out and
shit.
All the pictures.
So there was just a ton of, like, media about this.
Oh, yeah, they surrounded him. He lived with my grandparents.
Imagine. Yeah.
And they, the...
In Burien?
Yeah. And the FBI, the ATF, and the Department of National Security, NSA, right, National Security Administration, they all converged on the house with a SWAT team, helicopters. They cordoned off a two-mile radius because they didn't know if he was armed, and it was 6 in the morning, and they were going to go in, you know, guns blazing, and they knocked on the door, and my grandfather answered in his underwear, and then they came in and quietly grabbed him and my grandmother and put him on the front lawn, and then...
Uh-huh.
Woke my dad up, who was in a coke stupor, right?
Uh-huh.
And just sleeping in his underwear on the downstairs couch, and they pulled him out and arrested him with no incident, because he was like, what the fuck are you guys doing here? I'm in a coke stupor. And then they took him off to jail. They took him, they sent him out of state.
Mm-hmm.
They put him in a holding cell for a couple weeks. My mom came in and divorced him.
She was like, right there.
Yeah, she was like, fuck
this.
Did she know?
Did she know what he was
doing? Not at all. No. She knew that he did coke occasionally and that mm-hmm. he might have been up, you know, in some bad stuff. But then when he was in jail, he told her everything.
Really?
Like, when he was in federal custody, he told her everything. Like, I've been selling coke and we stole Boeing blueprint paper and a guy drafted some weapon systems and we sold them to people and we thought that...
Like, what countries was he selling this stuff
Syria.
To? Syria.
But it turned out that the Syrians that they'd been talking to were FBI agents who
Oh, of course.
Way yeah, so already
like a
way
huge,
ahead of
huge sting operation mm-hmm. then, huh? That is fucking crazy.
And then he turned coat on the Gambino family. And while he was in prison, he was like, please don't put me away for life. And so he turned state's evidence. And that also didn't make him very popular.
Well, I would guess not.
And then I became a comedian.
Oh, my God. I don't even know what to say.
That, it's like, a crazy story,
that
right?
That caught me so off guard. I'm amazed.
It's a crazy story. My mom raised me as a single mother, and my dad's side of the family, wonderful people, crazy, all crazy. I mean, my mom's side's nuts, too. I mean, you know, we got murderers and drug dealers and weirdos in there, but I think that's everybody's family has at least eight or nine of those on either side.
Eight or nine murderers?
On either side, each generation.
Yeah, yeah. I've got five murderers in my family.
But no, she was great. She raised me as a single mom and raised me in Normandy Park and right, you know, had her own little apartment. And she would go to the library and bring home comedy albums. And, you know, from the time I was 2 years old on up, she would bring home everything. Lenny Bruce, Bill Cosby. So I was the house was always filled with laughter.
Now, was it your mom that was really into comedy or were you really into comedy
as
a kid?
She really loved, she just loved, because she was very young. She was like 18 when she had me. And so she was just getting into that subculture, you know, and starting to listen to stand-up. And it was very political at the time, so she loved it. And I think there was a part of her that's like, I just want to raise a cool, you know, hip kid. And you're my only friend. I'm 18 years old, and I don't live with my parents. So, and it was the end of the 60s, which was still kind of a, still kind of taboo
to be
a young mother. So she did the only thing she knew how to do, which was try to create laughter. Out of it, try to make humor, which I think I do to this day. Like, it's all about taking the worst aspects of things and trying to turn them over so they're funny.
Right, right.
Take all the energy out of them.
Yeah, totally.
I learned that from her. Like, when things are really bad, find the sweet spot. There's got to be one somewhere where you can just poke at it and it's funny. And then it takes all the power out of it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Does your mom still live here in Washington?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just had to unplug my grandmother last week, and she's no longer in pain, but the best part is, this is, again, same thing. She calls me up and goes, so we took your grandmother off life support today, and I'm like, I know, I was supposed to meet you guys, but you didn't tell me that you'd moved her from the hospital, and she's like, well, it's probably better, because we just sat around and talked about what we're going to have for lunch and where we're going to go, and then your uncle showed up, and he wanted to talk about the new camper he got, And then your grandmother took her last breath, and we didn't even notice it. We were just talking about the dogs and which dog park we really liked. And I'm like, you guys are so fucking crazy. And she goes, I think that your grandmother would have liked to go out that way, totally unnoticed.
Yeah.
Totally unnoticed. Like,
right, right.
I'm having my last breath, everybody. Do you want to go to Ivers or Skipper's? Because I know you like chips, fish and chips, so what do you want to do? Should we take the dogs there? You think they'll let the dogs inside?
I feel a powerful lust for red salmon. that the same thing happened to me last Christmas right before Christmas. My grandfather died and we were all kind of gathered around him, and I had my dad called me while I was at work, so I got off work early, and he was like, your grandfather's in a real bad state right now, you better come and pay your last respects and that kind of stuff. So raced over there, and you know, ended up sitting there for a long time, and my wife went out and got a bunch of Subway sandwiches, and we all ate lunch there and stuff, and I had Dana Gould scheduled to come here that night, and so at one point I got up and I was like, look, I have Dana Gould coming over to our house in about, you know, an hour. I'll go do this and I'll come back. And so I left. And 15 minutes later, my dad called and was like, he's gone. He's gone. And then we all went out to Thai food.
That's how it works. Yeah. I mean,
Dana Gould came over. We all went out to Thai food.
In a perfect world, that's how that's supposed to work. Like, it's not supposed to be. I said this the other night, and I think it is now my life philosophy. I didn't even realize I was saying it until it just came out. And I was like, oh, fuck, that's what it is. As you get older, everyone around you, you know, is affected by death in one way or another.
Right.
And I think that if you live long enough, the whole point is to live long enough that what death does is it gets you prepared for your upcoming inevitability.
Right, right.
By slowly and systematically killing everyone around you. So as you get older, it just starts to happen with more immediacy. And eventually, yeah, yeah. You're just sitting there while someone passes away eating a sandwich. Like, yeah. They're done.
Yeah. Well, oh, man.
Luckily, we don't have to do anything with the body. Looks like the hospital's got that covered. Hey, did anybody get chips? Did we get chips? Because I think that's, after a certain point, it's not that it's callous. It's just like, it's going
to
happen.
It's a thing. Yeah. Well, and, you know, and especially in a situation like that where you actually get to be there, you know, during the last moments.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a sweet thing.
That's
right?
A big deal. And then, it really
yeah,
is.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it was a sad thing, and I felt super guilty about actually coming back and doing that conversation with Dana. You
did
know,
you bring it? Did you bring it to the podcast? Did you?
No,
you
no,
kept
no,
it
no.
Outside?
No,
it's hard. It's hard. I wonder.
Yeah. Well, I was sitting right where you're sitting, and I just remember like I really was not paying attention to anything he was saying. You know, I was just it was in one ear.
Yeah,
out
you
the
got.
Other.
There's yeah. so many emotional platforms. That,
yeah, yeah, yeah. But afterwards, you know, my grandma, I apologized. My grandma was like, "Oh my God, he would have told you to go if he could." You know, so. Yeah, boy,
I
this
felt
guy,
bad
this
that
is
I,
heavy.
No, I felt bad that I missed my grandmother's passing, but then when they told me that my grandfather called me, he's like, hey, well, you know, bad news. That's what my grandfather told me. Well, it's real bad news there. You know, yeah. nobody didn't see that coming. The guy's here, the dog. He calls the dogs the guys. The guy's here. Yeah, I just want to go to the park, and they keep telling me, hey, I want to go to the park, and I just, you know, where's mom at? And, you know, but then they don't really care because, you know, she just they didn't really like her very much anyways because she always yelled at him. So, I mean, you know, they're probably happy. I don't know what they're thinking. But we're going to – anyways, long and short of this is next Sunday we're going to have her her wake there at Sizzler because she liked that place.
Yes.
And they have a big room there. So I guess we could just rent the room out. And then
the one in South Center?
Yeah, exactly. And I go, hey, man, do we hate Grandma? Do we hate her? Is that what we were trying to, like, we hate her uh-huh. so much? And he goes, well, she liked that place. I go, did she actually request Sizzler all the time? Or was it that something where she was like, oh, that doesn't make me shit water? Because let's stop and think. When you say you, like, when you really like something, or are you just tolerable? Like, I'm tolerant of Sizzler. Yeah, I will go because I don't poop water.
It's your grandpa's favorite place.
Yeah. And he's like, well, he goes, because it's cheap. He goes, we can rent the room for $100. I'm like, oh, now we're getting to the real issue. Her last days on her. She wanted to be celebrated at a Sizzler. Nobody wants to do that.
You should have just found the last, like, Pietro's Pizza and just gone there.
Well,
and
I
sat in the dark with those really super dark red plastic cups.
The worst. Oh, the red plastic Italian restaurant cups.
Yeah, totally.
I said Skipper's early, and I don't even think they exist anymore.
No, there's one in South Center.
Oh, is there really?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, dude.
Skipper's.
Oh, close to the airport.
What's funny, yeah, I argued against this. I was like, we're not having...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was thinking a Sizzler. You said Skipper's. I was
Skipper's,
thinking
Sizzler's. Yeah. Sizzler. I think Skipper's long gone.
Yeah, there used to be one up in Edmonds that I went to sometimes when I was waiting for the boat. And then, you'd get bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
And the toilets there in the like, the waiting area, not clean.
Yeah, well, it was like actually going to the bathroom on a real skiff, a real fishing boat.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
why they call
you
it
have
Skippers.
To stand.
Yeah, well, your fish isn't deep fried. We don't batter it. It's Skippers. I'm cooking it on a console, a panel of instruments.
Oh my God,
that's what I'm doing. I'm a skipper.
That place was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah, I'm glad you remembered it. It's that and Sea Galley, my two of my least favorite.
Sea Galley
was a place where it was sort of like
is that a chain?
Yeah, and it was a cheap version of Salty's. Like, it was a seafood restaurant. Oh, God. Their special was a $30 bucket of clams. Like a 25-gallon bucket of clams, and if you ate them all,
you
it was
never,
free.
You really?
Yeah, who would want that reward?
Oh, like, my God.
Because you're going to launch clams. That's going to happen. You're a clam cannon at that point.
That's like taking the 1 gallon milk challenge.
Yeah.
You know? Except you're doing it with clams. With
I
something
did.
Grosser.
I think I was 9 or something. We went there and I tried to talk my dad to let me do it because I was like, I'm 9. I can eat a 25 gallon bucket of clams.
Wait, I thought your dad was in jail.
No, my stepdad.
Oh, your stepdad.
Sorry,
okay,
my stepdad.
Okay, yeah.
my surrogate dad.
I was like, I caught him. It's all a lie.
No, the Portuguese longshoreman that took over for my dad for later on. But I was like, I can do this. I understand that I need to eat 2,000-3,000 calories a day. I'm 9 years old. I'm growing. Let me do it. As long as I run around all day, I'm like a hummingbird. And he almost let me do it. And my mom is like, well, I mean, if he does it, we get it for free. He gets a T-shirt.
Yeah.
But he's also going to be shitting clams all night and day for the next 2 or 3 days, and he's gonna get poisoned. Like, he's gonna be poisoned. Like,
right.
One of those clams is gonna be bad. And he's.
Did you guys have two bathrooms?
We had 3 bathrooms in our house.
Oh, what's the problem?
Because we had teenagers, you know. But it didn't matter. My mom is like, I know how this ends. If this ends with him hunched over, his 9-year-old bird-like body hunched over a toilet, just heaving like an adult who had just had his very first sip of gin, or like, you know, he just went to a party where he mixed all of the alcohols. But I'm
right.
Not, oh. And I honestly, I was like, you know what? You're probably right.
I'm 9 years old. You had the cognizance.
I wanted to do it because I wanted the T-shirt, but I'm like, you guys are probably right. I'm probably going to throw up a lot of clams.
See, I didn't have, I still don't have that kind of, you know, thought process. I'll still go with the, that seems like a good idea.
All it takes, and tell me if I'm wrong, all it takes is, because you can get sick on anything. Bad chicken, you know, bad hamburger, you get like a bad bun.
Yeah.
But you get bad shellfish once, it's over.
Yeah, you can't eat shellfish.
Yeah, you show
and
up again.
You're probably going to the hospital.
Yeah.
Like, it's that bad. Yeah, no, I grew up on the beach, man. Yeah.
See, totally.
We used to go down to the beach and actually shuck oysters on the beach with my dad.
Oh, that's so cool.
And you know, he'd bring this little bottle of soy sauce and maybe some Tabasco, and then you just do the oyster shooters right on the beach. But you'd have to be very, very careful because the red tide, you know?
Yep.
Bacteria would come in, and boy, man, yeah.
Yeah,
I think I only got sick off of that once. But it was super bad.
I don't eat.
It took me a long time to like try that stuff ever again.
Once you get burned by it,
it's
a different thing. Like, I could go back to a hamburger a couple weeks after I get food poisoning.
Oh,
like,
easy.
I get it. You know, because it's not the sensory thing and the smell. Where like shellfish has something too. Like, it's got a smell and it's a sensory thing where you're like, oh, I know that. I can't approach it again for about 6 years.
Right. Yeah.
Oysters, the worst. Actually, because don't eat fucking shellfish in Portland. Just don't. I know they're on water, but it's not real water.
It's not real water.
It's dirty fucking water.
River water.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like a, what do they call the mixture of fresh and salty?
Oh.
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like the water?
Yeah.
God, what does, I should know that word.
I don't remember what it is, but yeah. You would think, like, oh, this would be another great place to eat seafood. I mean, Seattle's great because you're right on the water. It's misleading. Every time I've had shellfish there, something has gone wrong. And, like, the last time I was at this place called Shuckers, and I'll say their fucking name right out loud. I don't care. Shuckers.
Did the chef have a neck tattoo? Because if the chef has a neck tattoo or even a forehead tattoo, just don't eat there.
Well, it's Portland. Right? If it's Portland, you can't eat anywhere.
If it's a food truck, you can eat there.
Yeah,
but you can't eat seafood.
Like, if you're in Portland and the chef has a tattoo on his neck, you're in Portland. Everybody's got a tattoo on their neck. They actually shoot you execution style if you don't have a neck tattoo.
Yeah, yeah.
I ordered oysters because I was like, well, why not? I'm in Portland. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? We're all close to the water. And they brought me the oysters. This is the second time it had happened at Shuckers, by the way. This is the first time. The oysters, it looked like they shucked them with a fork. Like, just broken
just
shell.
Apart.
Like, they got so pissed. God. Like, I can't get this fucking oyster open. So they got, and then they hit like the fork with a hammer and it just shattered. Just shards of crap all over the, and I'm
so
like,
not only are you eating like clam poop, a large glob of clam poop, but you're also eating, you know, like shell.
Yeah,
shards.
I mean, you live close to the ocean. You know that when you shuck an oyster, you open the shell, you examine the oyster quickly. You also clean all the garbage out really quick.
Yes.
But you keep the water in there, and you also loosen it from the muscle, the thing that holds it in.
Right.
There's 3 things. It's a 3-step process. It's easy. Yeah. And if you work in a restaurant, you should
swallow
that.
It. You don't chew it.
Yeah, you don't chew it. But I'm like, well, there's a shit ton of glass in here. From the, you know, the shell's just broken pieces of everywhere. Yeah, I'm like, well, this is going to cut my throat up. So I'm not going to do that. So I pick it up with the fork, right?
Uh-huh.
The little cocktail fork. And I realize that there are things that are moving a little bit. Now, they're not maggots. I look, I'm like,
right.
It's covered with little worms.
Yeah.
Little worms. They're not maggots. They're fucking little worms. They're not good oysters.
No.
That's not supposed to be in an oyster. So I go, hey, I don't want to be a dick and say this out loud, but these oysters aren't good. They have worms on them. And she goes, let me see. And she looks at the plate and she's like, well, I know, but those are just, they're not bad for you. You can probably eat them. And I'm like, no, I will not eat these.
No, they're parasites.
Yeah, they're parasites. Like, this is something I don't want to put in my stomach. If I can visibly see it moving on an oyster. Oh, God.
Dude, that would make my stomach turn just looking at it.
Second time, we ended up going there for, we were at Bridgetown and somebody's like, we should go to Shuckers, man. I'm like, I've had a bad experience there. So I ordered something that wasn't even seafood related and somebody ordered like, they were like tiger prawns or some god-awful thing, right?
Yeah. And hey, those are good, man.
No, they're good, but like, you know, they're like coconut battered tiger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, fuck that.
So, you know, they either came in a bag or some guy was like, just rub them in coconut. And
they smell bad. Rub them in coconut.
But when they came to the table, they smelled like old shoes.
Oh.
And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? So the guy's like, I don't know. Maybe that's how broads taste. I'm like, if you put that in your mouth, you're going to lose all faculty for the rest of the week. You may have to go to the emergency room. You're going to pee out of your butt. That's going to happen. And you're also going to vomit.
Yeah. Blood.
Just send it back. Send it back and tell them it smells bad and you just want to get a hamburger or some get a pork slider. They come in a bag. They're probably frozen.
Yeah.
They're just popping them in a microwave. You won't be hurt. Twice, Shuckers. The fuck? Just don't eat seafood. Don't eat any fucking seafood in Portland.
Oh, that's terrible. That is so terrible. Before we go to our musical break here, we just want to say thank you to our new sponsor, Shuckers.
I was hoping that would happen. I was hoping you'd be like, and by the way, Shuckers is sponsoring
this episode, and maybe only half of it. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, like I said, let's take a musical break here, and when we come back, let's change subjects a little bit from death and diarrhea to your comedy.
Oh.
And your new album.
What's funny is both those things, diarrhea, are my comedy.
Are your comedy. Yeah. I think we're getting that. I think we're getting that. Yeah. We're featuring music by The Lights today. This song is called Two Times, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Me flat with your thumb and your finger. When I call you up on your telephone, you say that you want me to come over. You shake, 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 shake. You shake, 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 shake. You think I'm too dumb to when you roam. Cocaine and drugs and alcohol. The one to fend from you, girl. The one to fend from you.
Yeah, we might shit up here.
See little tiny worms in your oyster droppings. All right, well, welcome back, everybody. Derek Sheen is joining me here in Dining Room Studios.
Hi.
And we were just talking about bad restaurants. Bad restaurants.
Man,
well,
oh man.
I guess I wouldn't call like P.F. Chang's like a bad restaurant. It's good. It's decent. But it's not like mind-blowing.
Nobody's died there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, who knows?
I think it's probably not Jewel. You know.
It's what?
It's not Jewel.
Jewel the singer?
No, Jewel is the it's the Rachel Yang restaurant that is my favorite Asian restaurant
in
the
world.
Yeah.
Where's that?
They just moved. They were in Wallingford on 45th, and they're moving now to the new Fremont Commons area.
Really?
Which is going to be like three different really awesome restaurants.
Nice.
And a winery and a whole bunch
of stuff. I'm
going
to have to go check that out.
Rachel Yang and her husband opened Revel in Fremont. For sort of the Fremont Ballard area, and then her restaurant was Jewel, which was like I think it's the more feminine version of the restaurant. Because Revel's like lots of noodles, and it's very, every dish
is hearty.
Do
they do hand-shaved noodles?
Yes.
I need a good hand-shaven noodle.
Revel's the place to go.
There used to be a great place. You live in the same neighborhood. We're in Greenwood now.
Yeah.
And there used to be that Szechuan place. A couple years ago, there was an arsonist here in North Seattle that burnt down a whole bunch of places.
Two of the best restaurants in Greenwood. Period.
What? Which ones?
Well,
what are you
the hand-shaved noodle place.
Yeah, the Szechuan place.
The Szechuan place and the pho place, which was amazing.
Yes, thank you.
It was
better
the best.
Than Tan Brothers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, fuck yeah. Destroyed Tan Brothers. And their broth had more lemongrass, and it was so much more effervescent, it was just a better broth.
And if you got like a vegetable pho, they would load it with vegetables.
Yeah. They didn't kick you around.
Yeah. Well, you go to some pho places, and they put like 18 pieces of bok choy in there, which nobody likes. That's why they put so much in there. They're trying to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Right?
But bok choy doesn't really go bad. Like it gets limp. It gets limp. That's the worst. But you put it in soup. Who cares, right? I mean, I would go in that place on it. It was my favorite place to get pho.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Pho TikTok.
That's
moved
right.
Moved up in Shoreline now.
And I would go in and read old people magazines. Yeah. And just
from like 1984.
Fuck, they never changed their magazines. And just yellowed newspapers. But I'm happy because I'm about to have the greatest pho broth ever.
But those places, I always wondered if they were just going to have to like condemn that building that arsonist burnt down. Yeah. Because these three restaurants were in like the same building. And it was just, I mean, you could tell there was water damage from years past. I mean, just all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it looked like they had already caught fire at some
right.
point.
Yeah, exactly.
They were like, move the equipment back in.
It was basically held up with matchsticks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in retrospect, it made my life more difficult because they're not there, but I'm sure that the arson was a really, really positive thing that happened to all three of those places.
It was actually the safest thing that could have happened at that place.
The best thing that came out of those three restaurants was fire.
Just fire.
The hand-shaped noodle place was so good.
Oh, it was so good. And I can't, and for the life of me, I haven't been able to find a hand-shaven noodle that has satisfied me.
Go to Revel.
Since then.
Revel will blow your mind. And they have so many great things. I mean, they mix Korean, it's like a Korean fusion thing. So there's Korean and Vietnamese fusion.
Oh, nice. Nice.
So, like, you'll get, like, an amazing, almost a bibimbap sort of, like, you know, rice bowl that they do.
Yeah, yeah.
She does what I consider the greatest thing ever, which is a smoked tofu dish that she does.
Ooh, that sounds good.
It's so fucking good. And they're bringing it back. Like, it's a hit. It's one of those things. And she has Korean barbecue there as a plate.
Oh,
they make their own sausage. They make their own short rib steaks. It's crazy.
So hungry now.
So good.
She's so good. It's like dinner time right now.
Rachel Yang is the greatest thing to happen to food in Seattle. Like, Ethan Stoll is great. All these guys are really good. But Rachel, to me, is like the fucking greatest.
That's your jam, huh?
Yeah, she's the stuff. Like, when it opens again, I'm going a lot. I'm so excited. I'm really hungry now. I'm not eating.
I know. I'm so hungry now. Oh, my God. Let's talk about your comedy, man.
Okay.
So, I
actually wanted to go, I'm sorry. It's my natural, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I fucked that up. I always fucking things up.
Oh, man, I'm a failure.
No, you've got an album that's coming out. But what I wanted, actually, let's do this first. And let's make it quick because we're already running out of time.
It's me,
which has
I
been
do
awesome.
This.
We
sorry.
Should, no, no. What? See, there you go. You just said
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Ezra Brooks, thank you.
Let's hit really quick about how, I mean, you talked about how your mom kind of influenced you with bringing these comedy albums home and stuff and teaching you to love the comedic arts. But when did you first decide that this is what you wanted to do?
In all honesty, I really wanted to do it from the time she brought the first comedy album home.
Really?
Because I realized the power. This is going to sound so like I've already written this, and I haven't. But I was thinking, I've been thinking about it a lot before the album comes out. I've had a lot of heavy shit kind of coming up and making mm-hmm. me think about what I'm doing. And I think that that moment, the moment I saw my mom laugh, even as a kid, you know, I mean, she worked as a nighttime bartender waitress in the shittiest part of the airport, and then she'd come home, pick me up from daycare at 3 a.m, take me home, wake me up at 7, take me to another daycare place, go back to her other job. It's the 70s. She's trying to just be on her own. Never saw her laugh until she'd come back from the library and put something on.
Uh-huh.
Like Mort Saul or Dick Gregory or Lenny Bruce, she'd sit and smoke cigarettes in the living room at 18 years old, working two fucking jobs with a baby, and laughing her ass off. And that mm-hmm. was her, like, that made her so relaxed.
It that was took her
care
release.
Of, yeah, it took care of all the negative shit. And I think the older I got, those things where I'd see my mom laugh, she'd laugh to release all that poison that was going on. Because, like, my dad, like, my stepdad was, not great shakes. He was he's a hitter sometimes, bad drinker.
Oh, really?
Big guy, real big Portuguese guy, but a child inside, you know. Mm-hmm. But the thing with
my mom. I think most guys like that are.
Yeah, they really are.
They can't deal with their
emotions. He came from
emotions.
Abuse, and, you know, yeah. His mom and dad were, you know, his dad drank all the time, and so he came from that. But he wanted something good. He was a tragic character, man.
Yeah.
Like, he really wanted good things, and my mom was the impetus and the catalyst for that happening, but he just couldn't fucking accept it. So he'd lash out all the time. And the thing that separated her, like, the thing that made her feel better is stand-up comedy. I mean, she'd go and watch something on TV, or she'd put on an album, or she'd sit with me and come in my room and just put on a Steve Martin album. And we'd hold on to each other and laugh our asses off, because that was the thing that got her through that, is realizing that, you know, she's the one that taught me about gallows humor.
Uh-huh.
When that whole whistling through the graveyard, like when things are going their worst, find something in there somewhere that gives you some power where you can laugh at it. Because if you can laugh at a bully or you can laugh at something, it takes the power away from them. Once they're fallible, once there's a chink in their armor where you can laugh at them, then they have nothing over you.
Right.
And
right.
So any tragedy, anything, you can turn around and, you know, as long as you're not making fun of something that, you know, creates more pain, the idea is to just find the weakness in that thing and manipulate it, utilize right. it to your ability.
Yeah.
And I think comedy has been the thing where I was raised to use that as a weapon or as armor. Or so I think a lot of the stuff I talk about, God, am I going, I'm way too, talking way too much. But the thing is, I
no, don't worry about it.
I think comedy for me, for a lot of people, it's great because they're like, I can make people laugh and get pussy. And I like to use comedy as a catharsis sometimes. It makes me feel good. I don't get bored with my jokes. I don't get bored on stage with talking to people, because I think if I feel like I have a responsibility, if I get them to laugh, it makes things better in the room. I can just keep bringing things up. And I feel I don't feel like that, you know, like Rudy. I just feel like, that's what I'm supposed to be doing, is alleviating tension.
Yeah. More like Lucas.
Yeah, much more like Lucas. More I think the better Rudy. Like, he didn't overstay his welcome. That kid knew his fucking place, too. And people don't talk about him because, you know, one of them didn't turn out to throw a ring in a mountain. But
poor,
I think that...
Poor
that
Lucas.
Big, poor Lucas gets shit on. But I think that... I think for me, comedy has... And everybody has a different take on it, every performer. Mm-hmm. Me, it's... it really helps me get through a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And every night, I don't take it lightly. When I get on stage, it's fun for me, and it's important that I do well, because I need to have that catharsis with an audience where, even if I say something stupid and it gets a laugh, it's coming from a place where I'm not just phoning it in. I like it. I like that. I need it. And I remember going back and watching my mom came and saw me do my CD release, and she'd never seen me before.
Really? That was the first time?
Yeah, and I mean, I do jokes all the time. I wanted to be a comic when I was a kid, but I didn't get it. You know, I understood making people laugh, but not in a like a writing way.
Right.
I understood that I could say something to someone I was consoling in the middle of a tragedy, and I'd say something that made them laugh and they'd feel better, but I didn't know how to translate that thing into a stage driven, like I could go on stage and do it. Unless you go on stage and go, has anyone here suffered a tremendous loss? Please come to the front of the stage so I can see if this works. And
it's a great way to start a show.
Yeah. Has anyone here lost somebody they loved recently? Let me see if this works on you. So I think for me, it's like watching her in the front row, really honest, just having fun and totally, and it reminded me of that. Like, that's what you did for me. Mm-hmm. You put me in this environment where you taught me that you can laugh at things that scare you or make you angry, and it takes all the power out of it. And I'm not, you know, not everything I talk about is super, like, I'm not issue driven, but it's enough so that, you know, everybody can sort of dig in and go, oh, I can relate to this. But it's not like, hey, you know, paper towels are weird, or hey, you guys ever been on an airplane? It's stuff that you can relate to.
Yeah,
it's everyday things, or sometimes it's death, you know. Sometimes, I mean, I do a lot of dark shit where I take something simple and go down a real awful rabbit hole with it and then come out at the end with something that's sort of hopeful. But I think that's a good thing because it takes people on that trip where it reminds them about the tension and release of everyday regular life where they're fuck, something awful's going to happen. And then fireworks. And you're like, oh, what the fuck? Really? Yeah. Glitter? There's a glitter cannon at the end of this joke? So
he's smashing watermelons?
God damn it.
Oh, my God.
In slow
That's
motion?
Why Gallagher did so well.
By the way, speaking of which.
The secret has been revealed.
Go watch the video of Gallagher slow motion, high def, smashing stuff in a studio. It's fucking beautiful.
Is it?
It just came out today, and it's like glitter and him spitting glitter in slow motion and high def, and like his goddamn Sledge-O-Matic's on fire, and it hits. It's beautiful. And the music they did to like that goes along with it is amazing.
I'm gonna check that out.
It's just him slow motion beating the shit out of stuff because someone realized like, let's take Gallagher now at his weakest point, and try to infuse some strength in it, and put him in a position where he really like, this is the thing that he's doing, and it's awesome.
They're totally gonna revamp his career.
I think so. It's fucking crazy. Like he's spitting glitter out of his mouth in slow motion,
God.
And I go, oh, this man. Really?
He really had something going.
Yeah, he's run out of street jokes. Thank God. Let's see what happens now.
Yeah. So were you ever like, when you first got up on stage, how old were you when you first went up on stage?
11.
11 years old?
Yeah.
To do your first stand-up?
My very first stand-up. I even wrote jokes.
No shit.
And they were awful.
Was it for school or something like that?
No, I'd been trying to do jokes at school for the talent show from like first grade on up. And one of the other kids noticed that, you know, I would always try to do stand-up comedy. Whenever they'd give me a chance, the teachers would be like, Derek Sheen's going to do stand-up comedy now. And I'd go in the front of the class and try to do comedy. And
And would you get nervous?
No, I would do impressions.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'd do stuff I saw on TV. And I'd try to do the same jokes.
Right.
Without taking the fucks and shits out of them.
Yeah.
Like George Carlin, you fucking asshole. Thank you so much for not telling. Like going and doing Carlin bits in third grade.
Yeah.
And of course the teachers would laugh, but then be like, oh, fuck, we got to, no, don't. So you can't say fuck, shit, tits on stage. And that was early on. So one of the kids' dads was a musician who booked some clubs and he told his dad, like, oh, this kid always comes and does jokes. So the guy came and saw me.
Yeah.
And my mom and dad and him all talked. And he was like, I'm going to try and take you to the fair. We'll do some comedy at the fair. And you'll be the youngest stand-up comedy act, you know. And people will love you. And even if you don't do well, you'll do great. And it'll be fun. And I'll help you. And that guy hung out with me until I was, like, 13. So I went to open mics and did other stuff and tried to write comedy. And I was awful at it. Because I'm 11. What do you know at 11 that's even like, oh, poop smells, and I hate pizza, but now I like pizza.
Right.
Ooh, running's fun, but oh, it makes me tired.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have to go to bed at 9, but I actually stay up until 11. Nothing's funny. You're still figuring out like November and Tuesday and shit.
You were Butters from South Park.
Exactly. And it was awful, so I quit because I just felt, oh, I didn't feel good.
Yeah.
And my jokes weren't, I mean, they were.
When did you start back as an adult then?
20
years old.
I came back at 20.
Did an open mic or something?
Yeah, I went back to the underground. That's where I started, was the Comedy Underground
in Seattle.
And then I came back at 20 and tried to do it for like a year. And I think I think when people start comedy, when they're like, you know, the guys who have been doing it for 20, 22 years, right? The long haulers.
Yeah.
They started when they were that age, and they sucked at it. I mean, that's part of the gig. You suck at it, and you right. keep going. I stopped. I stopped at like 2 years in my 20s, and I'm like, I can't do, I'm not good at this. But then I got in a band, and uh-huh. I played on stage all the time, and I roadied for bands, and I went on tour with bands.
What band were you in?
I was in a bunch of just different rock bands around uh-huh. the time, you know, in Seattle, or like from 88 up until 2000.
Guitar player?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guitar player or bass player. I mean, nice. I did everything. I did pickup bands. I did reggae. I did, you know.
You did reggae?
Yeah, but like,
that's like fucking Coconut, man.
Oh, it was awful. Yeah, it wasn't. I'm not saying it was great, but I just did everything.
Something about reggae makes me so angry.
Like, try playing bass in a reggae band. I have an eight pound bowling ball bag full of human lips. It's all I can do to but I would do anything. I played progressive rock. Yeah. I played death metal. I played cover tunes in a fucking Black Angus touring bar that went to different Black Anguses.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was awful. They were all called the Spotted Cow bars. Yeah. And I did all the, they were awful. And, but I did all that shit, you know?
Yeah,
I,
yeah. So you kind of got out of like the anxiety of being up in front of people from doing,
yeah. And I got the exact same amount of pussy I would doing comedy, which was zero.
Which was zero.
Zero. No one gave a shit about the guitar player or bass player in a cover band, like who just played Summer of 69 three times, once during every set.
Right, right.
Just to like, come on, girls, come out and dance. And, it was awful. But, I would always be working in my head, like, how mm-hmm. am I, when I go to rehearsal, you know, there's going to be downtime, what am I going to talk about? Or I'd think of things during the day I thought were funny, I'm waiting for the moment to say them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you evolve at your sense, when you're college age, like 18 to 24, 25, your sense of humor starts to evolve, and your sense of self becomes a little bit more centered. So it's much easier to start doing comedy at that age. And it's going to be painful and shitty because you don't know yourself. You're not, you know, you have bird legs getting out of college. You're just learning how to pay your bills and be on your own. So I think all of that the stuff plays in. That's why it takes 20 years to get to a point where you're really good.
Right, right.
You know, and me starting at 33, 34 again was when I was past all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like I'm done with the who am I and... what do I actually find funny? And what's, you know, what's happening with my, what's, why is this hair growing out of me?
Yeah.
So I think once you get to that point, I mean, now, and you know, I think we're 8 years in and it's much easier. I can see looking back like, yeah, if I started in my 20s, I would be right where I'm at now anyways. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't think I've lost anything. I'd be as comfortable as I am now.
Yeah.
And it's all about just that, it's that growth thing. I think it just takes, when you find a thing you're dedicated to, it takes a long time to get good at it. I'm still not where I want to be, but I think that starting late, you
will
know,
you ever be where you want to be?
Absolutely not. No, I don't even think I'm an eighth of where I want to be, you know, where I should be right now. I'm still not, I'm never happy.
Do you think other comedians, like Patton Oswalt, you're going on tour with Patton Oswalt here pretty soon.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I'm so fucking nervous and excited.
Have you met him before?
No. I have met him. I got drunk with him last time he was here when
he
did his special. And I've gotten drunk with him before. Actually, the last two times I've met Pat and we were hammered. Yeah. We got hammered. We got hammered together. But I, you know, and I told him, like, I got to fucking do a new bucket list because mm-hmm. I remember...
I saw that tweet.
The thing that...
I think I commented on it. I was waiting for a comment back, but you never commented back on it.
I've got...
You're, you know, I was hurt. I was hurt.
I'm really sorry
about
that. I'm
going to be serious.
I'm sorry again. I make a lot of mistakes. Very short attention. So I'm like, I should say something. Ooh, there's a marble. And I did, I remember sitting in my car with my friend Kelly, who I haven't talked uh-huh. to in forever. I haven't talked to her in forever, but she's one, like, she was, her and my friend Heather were like my best men at my wedding, right?
Yeah.
And I only had one dude at my wedding party because I was like, ah, fuck, I hate guys. Like, guys, you know, at that point, I'm like, it's ladies. I get along better with ladies.
Yeah, yeah.
And we sat listening to Feeling Kind of Patton. I'd just gotten it at Sonic Boom. And I was like, oh, I got to get this because I saw it on the Mr. Show website. And I'd read a little bit of his stuff. And he used to do the film reviews on Mr. Show's website way back when. And they were fucking
this
hilarious.
This was like 10 years ago?
Yeah. Fucking hilarious. Yeah. And because they, you know, his film reviews were written in crayon on pieces of fucking legal paper where he would send them in as this guy who's just a complete idiot. And or his scripts where he would send things as a script writer.
That's genius.
Starfight, the script, the movie, the script. And then he would just fucking write it in like legal paper with pen just scratching it into the paper. And so I went and got the album. We were driving. I think we were going to meet somebody for dinner for their birthday. And I had to pull the car over like 9 times because I was laughing so hard. I thought I was going to crash the car. I thought I was going to wreck it. That heaving laughter I'd never experienced before, where I was listening to someone who was doing things that I loved, but then taking them to another level and then another level. And being so graphic, and their writing was so amazing because they were doing all that. You know, I love Dennis Miller a lot, and I hate him now. But I mean, I loved Dennis Miller a lot because
everybody hates him.
Dennis
now.
Would do this thing where, I mean, it wasn't just the sub-reference thing; it was his descriptive analysis of things that was so airtight,
right,
that as it began to roll along, you couldn't help but laugh because you're like, this is so fucking well put together.
Yeah.
And every point you're hitting is really funny. And Patton does that thing, but he does it with a visual style.
Right.
Where you have to visualize these things, and they're fucking, most of the time, it's a progression of just Lovecraftian horror.
Well, I agree with you, but I think it's more of like, he's interested in the same things that I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it makes it funny because he's using these references, which I always reference, you know, Star Wars, nerd culture, you know, everything like that.
But I mean, that first album is like, you know, talking about Tom Carvel.
I've never heard the album. So.
Oh, man. Nobody knew who Tom Carvel was until Patton Oswalt started talking about Tom Carvel's ice cream cakes. And I remember the commercials. And, you know, that description, or the guy who was the exact opposite of Bob Ross in his town, who used to host an art show where he would teach people to paint, but he was a German impressionist who Patton makes him sound almost like Brother Theodore, who's another one of my heroes.
Uh-huh.
Brother Theodore was a Holocaust survivor from Auschwitz who became a monologist, but he was a crazy, short, tiny German man, it's not Keir Dulay. It's the guy who's in he did fucking short, tiny little wrinkled apple head. And he was this impressionist monologist who would talk about all of the horrors. Like they would only light him from underneath in his theater shows.
Uh-huh.
And he would talk about loss and sex and food and love. And from this place where he would build up this awful voice, it is German anger about being alone. And Patton does this thing about this painter in his town who had a show who was the exact same character, like that character, this guy who would just keep building like this menagerie of horrors that he presented to the audience where they would you have no choice but to laugh because it's so fucking dark and funny. And I remember sitting in that car with Kelly and going, that's allowed now. Yeah. I didn't know this was allowed. Like if that was, when I was doing stand-up, everybody had rules. You got to do the rule of threes. You got to do everything 3 times. You got to do 3 examples of things. Always do jokes you know the audience could relate to. Because if you do something outside of that, then, you know, they may not like you or blah, blah, blah. And Pat was doing something where he was like, 5th wall.
Yeah.
And it was fucking brilliant. And it shocked me into that place where I was like, I want to do this again because I think I get that it's okay to do things. I was scared a lot of the times talking on stage because I didn't know it was okay and what wasn't okay because everybody wants to come over and go, hey, don't do jokes about this ever. Never joke. Anybody who says don't talk about something, A, they're wrong, fuck them, and B, that's the exact thing you should be talking about all the time. And so when I went back, I told her that day, I'm like, I'm going to try this again. And we went to dinner with our friends and I told her, you know what? I have a new goal. At some point, I'm going to get good enough at this, and I'm going to open for Patton.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my fucking bucket list. If I get to the point, I'm going to open for Patton.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, now it's that. But then when it happened, I was like, oh, fuck, I should call her. But she hates me now. It's been years since I've seen her.
So how did this come about then? What did Patton contact you?
No, Patton's manager Dave Rath, who's who also has hooked me up with Brian before, and also is my friend Mike Drucker's manager.
Agent.
And so Mike recommended me for some stuff, and Brian recommended me for some stuff, and things have been really good. Mike is really good friends with Brian and Patton. He's worked with them a lot.
Cool.
Just him helping me out probably had an 99.7% reason why Dave called me, and the other 0.2% was Dave was like,
"Well, that's great, though.
There's nobody else.
You're gonna be opening up for one of your, you know, comedy heroes."
Yeah, and I get to drive with them. I'm terrified of that because I know we've gotten hammered, but I'm like, that's some of these are like 4 or 5 hour drives. When I traveled with Brian, it was great because we immediately just hit it off the bat because I'm like, we love the same music. And I played a bunch of metal. And we also talked about horror movies and stuff. And then serial killers. And then, so next thing you know, it's been 4 days and we've been traveling in the car. And we're like, okay, well, see you later.
Yeah.
With Patton, I'm intimidated because I know it's just, I think that I can't be like, hey, have you heard the new Judas Priest? He's going to be like, that's not at all what I'm into. Please don't play that. But I think
that's really cool, though, man.
It's super fun.
Yeah, totally. I'm really excited for it. When are those shows?
The 12th, the 13th, and the 14th
of
October.
October. Okay, so they're coming
Tulalip
up real quick.
At the Orcus Theater.
Patton's playing the Tulalip.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's doing the really big theater.
Gotcha.
And then we're doing Central Washington University, the student
where
union
I went
ballroom.
To school.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing the student union ballroom.
Nice.
How big is that?
Is it cool? They made a new student union building after I left, and it's very, very nice. I don't know how big that.
Very excited about
that. But that's cool, though.
And then the Elsinore Theater in Salem, Oregon.
Right on, man.
And the Elsinore is going to be great. That's an old theater, beautiful. And plus, the big gift for me is that I get to perform in front of Patton's audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, man, the only reason I'm doing, and like now, my big goal is to start building an audience because I want people that like me to come see me.
Yeah.
I don't want to do comedy. Comedy clubs, great.
Yeah.
Great, you get paid, and then you get to go do the next thing. But, man, unless you get to a certain point where it's your fan base, it's always going to be guys who are like, man, I paid to hear some jokes I could tell, and now you're just talking about your wiener. I brought my lady, and I don't even know who you are because you're not on TV.
That's 80% of comedy club audiences. They're like, well,
totally,
I got free tickets.
Yeah, and like you're saying, too, like that, you know, I think
Patton's audience will really enjoy you, too, because you have that cadence.
So.
You've got that kind of, I hesitate to say it, but the nerd cred.
Oh, yeah, I'm a giant geek. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not letting the cat out of the bag. I'm sure you probably already guessed this years ago, and if anybody's if you're listening now, and by now I mean this happened a week ago, but if you're listening to this, you can already guess by the sound of my voice that at one point, maybe even recently, I masturbated to a visual picture of Natasha Badenoff from the Rocky and Bullwinkle show. I'm not kidding. Because it was just in my spank bank, and I...
It was just there.
It was just there, and I'm like, I'm doing it.
Don't be a Judgy Judy.
She was fucking hot. She looked like... I don't know. Go online and just look up comedian Lizzie Pilcher, and you will, like, you'll understand... Like, I visualized it was a cross between Natasha Badenoff and Lizzie Pilcher, and I'm like, they're very
similar.
So it's
the human version.
Well, I didn't think of Lizzie. I didn't think of Lizzie while I was masturbating because I stopped and I was like, Lizzie would punch me if she ever even thought I was fucking masturbating to her. But it was Natasha Badenoff.
Well,
so
hopefully she
doesn't
listen to
Lizzie.
This.
My safety, Lizzie Pilcher.
And when's the? We got to wrap things up here. But when's the album coming out?
Lizzie Pilcher is Pilcher. Go ahead and Facebook her and then let her know that you heard about me masturbating to her. The album comes out October 30th on rooftopcomedy.com.
Awesome.
And they've been fucking super great and really, really, it's exciting that someone likes, you know, they're like, we're doing it.
Yeah.
So we did it.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, their pre-sales are available now. There are a couple tracks at Rooftop, which you can go and listen to ahead of time.
Wonderful.
For free. And they're pretty fucking good. And you're going to want the whole album.
When's it come out?
October 30th.
Release date?
Tuesday, October 30th. Awesome. We went with a Tuesday because that's when all the major releases come out.
Yeah,
we figured,
yeah.
Why not try and fit in with that schedule? And then I go on tour November 1st. I mean, I'll Seattle Comedy Underground, the 25th through the 28th, I'm doing 6 shows with Brian Cook and Heather Thompson, because I brought some people along because I don't want to do an hour. Because I don't want to do anything on the CD. I'm writing new stuff, but it takes a little while. So
yeah.
And they're two of my favorite comics. I figured I'd bring them both out and do something with me. So it'll be fun. Barbara Holmes doing she's emceeing the shows. I've got some other guest sets from comics I love, and it's going to be a really great weekend. And then I go on tour in the Southeast.
That's great, man. That's great. And for all this information, you can go to DerekTime.com. Which is Derek's very, very nice website. And featuring artwork by Mark Allender.
Mark Allender, Pasty Boy, did the cover. The album's called Holy Drivel.
Yeah.
And
I like that cover.
It's great. Chip Pope came up with the title.
Yeah.
And it's I'm a huge Dio fan. I'm a major Dio fan.
See, that's what I was wondering is like after Holy Diver, right?
Yeah, it's totally. And I mean, Dio's another big inspiration. So it's like, why not just make my very first album, like Dio's first solo album? Because I think he's a huge inspiration to me.
Yeah.
I love
yeah.
Ronnie James Dio.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Ronnie.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Ronnie.
And rest in peace to my grandpa and rest in peace to your grandma.
Yeah, they're both gone now.
Yep.
Nobody saw that coming. Totally unexpected. Death is totally unexpected, Aaron.
Nobody ever sees it coming. Yeah. Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on the show.
And thanks for having me.
I would love to have you back on. Because we got a lot of things to talk about.
I'll be here tomorrow. What are we doing?
All right. Let's talk about this off air. We got to end things. You're into meats and horror movies. That's good enough for me. Okay, we're going out today with the song Basket.
Same band? These guys are great. The Blakes are great.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Love it.
They're awesome. Really enjoy this song. So, hey, thanks for listening, everybody. And remember, you can go to our website, www.air-raid.net. You can buy t-shirts there. You can also donate to us because those donations do help out a lot. We got some new equipment that we need to acquire. And putting this show out for free once a week costs money. So if you can donate, please do. Or buy a t-shirt for $15. Help us out as well.
You'd save money if you didn't have to put me up in a hotel.
Right. Yeah. Even though you live like 2 blocks away.
I know, but it's a weird thing. You insisted on it.
I'm putting you up at what's that one? The Close In.
Oh, the Close In, yeah. With a K at the beginning?
With a K, yeah. Right behind the metal, the guy who buys copper from meth heads. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. This is The Blakes with Basket.